Good evening, everyone. We are live, so
we are not late.
Yeah,
we
promise. We are not late. We are never late. we've never been late. We never will be late. Anyone who tells you we are late is lying to you.
Yes.
But welcome back to our regular Monday stream. I'm, as always, joined by my regular co-host. Is this still your show on Monday, or have we just given up on that distinction?
This is the show known as Evelyn's Corner, I believe.
I put it on both playlists.
No, not sure. It's like we're late.
Yeah. Technically, you guys were early.
Yeah, we are actually 2 minutes back in time. It's literally just gone 7 o'clock.
Yes, exactly. But we are, as always, not doing a zeitgeist topic. I guess we can talk about what's going on like right now, since it will dominate the news cycle.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Things are happening. What a shame.
I was trying to think of a puff news story to think about, but it went out my head there. I was thinking about, like, what's going on today? That's like a puff piece. But the
local man rescues dog from chimney.
Yeah. There was, I don't know, there'll probably be some sort of camped news vertical somewhere.
See, there we go. We're already, is that a can of tenant super? Of course it is.
Yes, it is. I see you guys are appreciating the work that I've put into the thumbnail. I don't know, before we get too far into it, we do have a few accoutrements today as well that we'll be whipping out.
I've got my wee hobo bindle and whatnot, full of all my hobo bindle necessities, like my stabbing knife and my crack pipe and, I don't know, my begging cup and whatnot.
That's how dare you?
Yeah, you've got a Tim Pool.
That's not
cosplay.
A Tim Pool beanie, that is a homeless beanie. I'm being a homeless person.
How does one tell the difference between a Tim Pool beanie and a homeless beanie? Though?
The homeless beanie's washed more. Ba-da-da-da-da-da. Hey. But we're kind of starting a little bit of an arc, although we'll be having a slightly different stream on Wednesday. We have teased it and promised it. The stream on Wednesday will be with Mr. Pat Marhat. Excuse me. When we will be talking about the Sopranos, specifically Tony Soprano. And the idea of Tony Soprano as the last kind of TV patriarch.
Yes.
He's, I don't know, I don't want to say Bill Cosby, but it's that kind of thing in that he's the fallen 90s version of the TV patriarch. But we'll not discuss that now. But
before we get into the stream itself, though, shall we quickly do the usual shilling? We have, of course, our most recent Nomos event coming up very soon. It's just over a month away now.
Yep.
That'll be on the 27th of May in Manchester. If anyone wants to have a look at buying a ticket for it, please do visit the website that is linked both below and currently in the comments at the moment.
Gabagool! People are gabagooling.
Tickets are less than £40 once you include the Eventbrite fees. We'll have both Christopher Hansen, who is himself a Mises Institute fellow,
yes,
and one academic agent along to give us a flavour of what the Austrian school looks like through a more traditionalist or realist or whatever sort of lenses we've been using over the last few months. We shall look at the Austrian tradition in that sort of sense. We'll have the full venue from probably, 7 o'clock till well into late this time. There'll be a full hot buffet and then a bar that shouldn't be, hopefully, like horrible London prices.
No, it should be, it'll be city centre price, unfortunately. It will be in central Manchester, but yeah. Come and see us in person, and Mr. Parveen and Mr. AA will be there as well.
We'll also have a hat as the MC for the evening.
Yes, we'll have Mr. Panama hat too. There's going to be more stuff going up on that. I know there's been nothing this month so far on Anti-Politics, but there will be more on Anti-Politics. We're just kind of gearing up at the moment. We have been just rather busy with our regular stream stuff. But we do have the Substack, and I'll be putting up some of the Nomos stuff there, you know, just to give people some more clarity as well. And but we do have kind of written stuff in the pipeline, and there's lots to go back and read. We were quite busy in March and February, so there's quite a backlog of stuff if people want to view our written content. And
we also just generally appreciate anyone who shows up for the streams, interacts with them, because ultimately at the end of the day, if you interact with the streams, YouTube knows you want to see them and it will show you to them more often, as it will with other people. So do the algorithm summoning dancing in the comments and whatnot. And if you feel very generous, you can support us on here via super chats and super stickers. And also,
we are still monetized somehow.
Yes.
Tell you what I'll do is I'll before we get straight into the topic here, I have set up a couple of bits here if I can find them, because I've got you in a slightly bigger form there, and I've also got
it's homeless us.
It's homeless us. So every time we ask for donations, it's going to have to be to be homeless us.
I think I mentioned as well last week that you can support us on Substack, and when I mentioned that, someone decided to get the $50 thing on Substack. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you guys. You know, guys, I have been very good recently. But yeah, where a lot of people have been wondering what kind of angle we'd be tackling the whole economic activity thing from.
I think maybe we'll get laterally into why we've specifically chosen economic inactivity, because I think this is very specific to certain elements of UK policy.
And yes, it is.
Other narratives around things like the Great Resignation can be seen in a very different light when you begin to realise some of the trickery that's being pulled to make a category like economic inactivity stick.
Yes, the first thing I want to talk about in with this, kind of as we get into the topic itself, because a lot of people, if you don't know, that the large thrust of it is, in Britain, we'll describe it in detail, people who would previously be classed as unemployed are now largely classed as economically inactive.
Which means they are counted separately from unemployment statistics.
Yes, they are.
So by classifying, say, 1/10 of the unemployed people as economically inactive, you lower the entire sort of ratio by that whole amount, which on paper means a little like there's less unemployed people. But now unemployed only means if you are currently unemployed and also looking for work, and or are also available for work. And we'll get to some of the more specific characteristics for that later, but what that allows is for large amounts of essentially like 1980s style, what would you call it? They had the two-story stacks of bin bags. And, the strikes and whatnot.
You mean the winter of discontent? Yes.
We are engaged in winter of discontent levels employment. It's obvious to anyone that's able to like see with their eyes, in their local community. But we are then told, oh, unemployment's actually only 3%.
They just done lay break. Thank you, Harry Robinson, there. It's fine. They've not resigned. They just don't break.
They just done lay break.
Oh, this ain't a strike. We all on break.
Clacking of DMV spec fingernails on keyboards.
Well, the way in which a lot of this stuff was telegraphed, I think it goes without saying that a large part of the acceleration of people not participating in the labour market, no matter how they brand it, were the lockdowns. It was, the shutting down and re-gearing of the entire UK, US and all Western economies during the lockdown period. It has definitely had the year zero effect.
We know it's bad enough that we don't have to sit here and do a stream being like, well, here's all the reasons why working nowadays is bad compared to 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So instead we're going to pick out some little bits of it. But one of the things I did think was quite interesting right off the bat here, as you've sort of mentioned, is that, like, the second paragraph in the Wikipedia article is like, some economists have described the Great Resignation as akin to a general strike.
Well, all of
a sudden, something that is people leaving their jobs because conditions just don't work out. Either the job itself isn't providing what it needs to for them to live, or the conditions at work, be it because it's remote work or work that the nature of has changed because of lockdown stuff, or people just frankly recognising the fact that the job I'm in is not going to be here in 2 years' time. I'm going to go find a job somewhere else before there aren't any left.
It's also the fact that people are feigning amazement that the entire jobs market was shut down, altered, and then effectively rebooted, and now people have found themselves having to be in different positions.
That's just people who are economically illiterate. That is always the case.
Yeah.
What is more telling is the fact that a subset of people who purport themselves to be economically literate as their job are putting forward a line here that isn't that, oh, well, policy like this makes actual labour markets untenable. Their point is, oh, actually, the worker en masse has awoken. He is conscious and he has realised that he needs to leave his job. Because as Robert Reich's going to go on to tell us, that it's brutal American capitalism that's behind the Great Resignation.
The entire premise of the Great Resignation has turned out to be complete horseshit. It says, is an ongoing economic trend in which employees have voluntarily resigned from their jobs en masse beginning in early 2021 in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Among the most cited reasons for resignation include wage stagnation, amid the rising cost of living, limited opportunities for career advancement, hostile work environments, lack of benefits, inflexible remote work policies, and long-lasting job dissatisfaction. But you're right, all of this has been jacketed as almost like civil rights decisionary.
Yeah, it's framed as like, it's like a rational choice, and these people are all enlightened people that they don't do capitalism anymore. You know, you as a boss, you're not going to do that to me, the employee. It's none of that. It's just the fact that several of them, or large proportions of people, have basically been told that, oh, by the way, your job's not going to be here for much longer.
I must say, we are in a state of collapse watch.
Yeah, so. As I said to you when we were kind of talking about it earlier on, they're kind of shit instead of getting off the pot. They're realizing that they need to move to a different job now whilst the jobs are still available.
We'll go into what the actual factors are for the quote-unquote great resignation, because it really gets nibbled when you get into all the different factors. We'll get into long-term sickness, early retirement, which we've talked about before in our skills collapse stream, but there is quite a large amount of different factors that allow all of this to be explained in very normal terms. Mm. And it's incentives. It's where really the Austrian school comes into its own. And I know we're kind of hyping up the Mises times, no more stuff. But it's really where the Austrian school comes into its own, and where we end up with a much clearer sight of what is going on than most quote-unquote economists.
Very much so. Because so much of what is economics nowadays is obfuscation.
All right.
Fill that up.
Ah, okay.
Back in a second.
Evan's going to grab us more water, for we are very thirsty today. But this is a piece quoting Robert Reich, the eternally confused and self-contradictory economist. And he likens the supposed Great Resignation, which isn't happening, or at least it isn't happening in the way that they say it is happening, is a reaction to the brutal capitalism of America, the brutal capitalist environment. All these workers have been imbued with class consciousness, and through this class consciousness have decided through their energies to seek a better world for themselves.
Well, yeah, it's like Marxism 101.
Yeah.
You find a movement that's engaging in some way against employers for whatever reason, and then you just like hijack it, you Marxist jacket it. You have a united front with these people who are standing up to the mean capitalist class.
I don't even think they're trying to do it for political motivation reasons here. This is really just trying to explain away a failure of the labour market.
Oh, no, of course it is, but that's what I mean by it. It's almost sort of perfect. They are taking problems they have caused.
Yes.
And they're blaming them on someone else.
Well, they're saying they're not probably. It's like, nope, everyone's resigning from work due to economic incentives no longer making sense. Here's why that's a good thing.
Yeah, I see there's people in chat like, oh, searching for work for half a year now. I know all too well about that, I'm afraid. There is a sort of band of people who are in between stuff, where if you've got the qualifications that are supposed to set you up for working in a professional environment, but you don't have the experience because your education basically ended around 2020.
Yeah.
That you are basically just humped on the coal heap. There is no help for you.
There is no help, no. There's another aspect to this. The Telegraph reports that workers miss their pre-COVID jobs as Great Resignation becomes great regret. Thousands of workers quit their jobs during the pandemic over pay and conditions. Again, that is just taken as given. And from the research we've done, no one seems to have proven that that is the case. No one has proven that these people left their jobs because, you know, everyone isn't satisfied with their paying conditions at their job.
Yeah.
People would always like to be paid for more and have better conditions. That's kind of a given for the worker. Look at the thing,
a survey of 3,000 white-collar workers who moved jobs. That's not them leaving the workforce. That's them moving from one job to another.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the whole thing is here is that, oh, it's the great resignation of this, as if these people are dropping out and disappearing. No, they're resigning because they're moving to something else, because they're able to somewhat identify the fact that the jobs market, as bad as it is now, is going to be a lot better than it's going to be in 4 or 5 years' time.
Yeah. But a lot of them is saying that 71% wants to return to their pre-pandemic employer, which implies to me that that wasn't a choice.
Mm.
I believe that a lot of these people, you know, they, like I said, they jumped before they were pushed. A lot of people have a lot of inertia in their jobs and do not leave jobs unless they feel they have to. A lot of people will stay in what is effectively a miserable job if they still think it's viable and better than the alternative. So the fact that 71% of people want to return to their pre-pandemic employer implies that they didn't really want to leave in the first place, which implies that it really was just a matter of incentives and failure of the labour market. But we'll get into even more detail, because I actually put this on in the notes near the end, because I realised the stuff I was finding just completely kicked like the shit out of the Great Resignation narrative. And it's amazing looking at it now. Nobody, I think, in current year would agree that the Great Resignation is still going on, that there is this mass labour movement happening that is complete nonsense. And yet it was presented to us in 2021 and 2022 as fact, yeah, by all sections of the establishment.
It's almost kind of strange that we have this article here that's so current that still uses the term.
Yeah. Well, they're referencing a past event, basically.
No, exactly. But even then, that's not like our elites to do that.
Kate's mentioning something we'll talk about later, and we'll have a dedicated stream to this, don't worry. IR35 did clear a huge amount of self-employed people from the job market in 2020. It is one of the most disruptive pieces of UK legislation, and it's something that has been woefully undercovered in many areas, but it's also something that's extremely technical.
Yes.
So it's quite hard to engage people with it. But we will be talking about the UK legislation known as IR35 at some point in the future, because it has wreaked havoc with the transport, engineering, and in many cases the hospitality sector as well. So look out for that. But it's just, I do want to challenge like the base assumptions of the Great Reset, because as we go through this,
the Great Resignation.
Yeah. Because it factors into some of that narrative stuff that really it is not that the current elite is in complete control of current events. They never are. They never will be. They are there.
They are always there attempting to create the illusion of total control.
Well, they also, their power is in reframing things.
Mm.
They, no matter what happens, they will reframe it like they are in control, like they wanted it, and like it's a good thing. Unless they are in like an emergency mode, in which they will reframe it as an out-group enemy activity.
And it has to just shut it down.
Yeah, that needs you to engage in counteractivity to it. Like I said, they are the herders of chaos, and they are the framers of reality. They are the ones who tell you what reality means.
But as those clever people at the Mises Institute always inevitably point out,
yes,
it is the very policy and stimulus set up to create, not create so much,
yes,
but protect existing job relationships that made this whole problem in the first place. Here's an article. When was this from again?
This is called The Fundamentalist Point of Inflation. That's much more than transitory. It is from December 2021, so quite early in this narrative, and they picked up quite well on it.
And it's a response, of course, to Paul Krugman.
Yes.
For Krugman, the inflation today seen comes from the interplay of two sources. Returning consumer demand, catalyzed by financial stimulus, and two, supply chain issues exacerbated by a mass departure of workers coined the Great Resignation. His analysis is technically correct, but grossly misleading. For one, Krugman fails to mention how his first point is causal to the second. Strong fiscal stimulus and the effects of lockdowns contributed to dramatic reductions in labour force participation, which have not since recovered.
That's just the main point here, that we need to hammer home to people that all of this is being caused and was caused deliberately by the mass labour demobilisation and then, you know, limited remobilization of the workforce centrally by central government.
Well, think.
And the stimulus and the furlough schemes had a large impact on this.
Well, think of right at the start of 2020. How many small businesses were screwed over by local council rules about how, well, you can operate your site as normal, but you can only have 6 staff inside instead of 10 because they'd be too close.
Yeah.
Or you can only have so many customers or so many tables seated or so many people coming in and out by hour. Now, all of a sudden, you've taken all the available value in labour hours that business could offer to employees and have limited it. You've all of a sudden said, well, oh, you can only have, you know, 3/5 of your normal productive capacity in here, so turn round and tell 20% of your employees are not going to be employed anymore.
Well, a great way of stopping giving people remuneration packages is to basically force them to quit is a huge thing here too. Yeah. But it's amazing that the mainstream media can create this illusion of the Great Resignation when it coincides with the end of the furlough scheme and the end of the stimulus projects. Of course, people are going to leave their fake jobs that is basically just a stimulus or furlough fiddle,
yes,
as well.
Well, I think that we shall not deal with the specific subject of fake jobs today.
No, we will not.
For this is a future stream, but we're hoping that in the course of treating this one, you know, solely on its own, treating that solely on its own, a couple of some other things, we can sort of fully put together a picture of what we might refer to as the sort of shadow economy.
Yes. Well, I also wanted to preface this too with some more from our friends at the World Economic Forum. Press W to signal your allegiance to Mr. Schwab in chat.
Yes.
It will keep us safe.
We love Klaus Schwab and we have an unending adoration for the nation of Israel.
Yes, of course we do. The world's biggest trial of the 4-day work week has come to an end. These are the results. The 4-day work week is something we've talked about a little bit when it comes to kind of demobilization of the workforce.
Mm.
But it is something that is very telling in that a lot of the work that is going on is not productive work. And a 4-day work week, you mentioned the winter of discontent and, you know, the late Labour era pre-Thatcher stuff.
Mm.
It's very much almost like a reframing of that. They're not saying you have to work a 4-day work week because the society is collapsing, which is the reason.
Yes.
Things are collapsing. Therefore, yeah.
The 4-day work week is a policy that allows us to ration the labour hours more equitably.
Yes, exactly. It is full collapse watch. But they're reframing it as, look, guys, it's full gay luxury communism is what it is. Thank you, chat, for your regime signifiers. They will keep us safe.
We need a couple of Ukraine flags, and I think we'll be pretty much set there.
Yeah, that's.
Then someone else needs to make a big donation to Pfizer or something like that on our behest.
I don't know. Maybe someone needs to play some footage of a grenade being dropped from a cheap drone to the sound of really, really terrible fake hard bass. But that would probably not be the best. It's a whole trial of. There was a big UK trial. Workers at more than 60 UK companies trial the 4-day work week between June and December 2022. More than 90% of participating businesses have opted to continue with the 4-day work week, with 18 adopting it permanently. It's amazing.
Wait.
What?
The 60.
Yeah.
18 adopting it permanently. So actually only, what, less than 1/3?
Well, that's a weird one. 90% business opted to continue with it. I guess they've not adopted it permanently yet.
We offered some people who work in our office the ability to work 4 less hours a week and never have to come in on a Friday, and they said yes. Oh, yeah. My. Oh, I'm so surprised.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it is the reframing of the rationing of work. If you work a proper job, if your, you know, job isn't fake, as we'll get into in detail in another stream about the amount of quote-unquote work that goes on that is completely not real. The idea that you can have a 4-day work week and it will not affect productivity is ridiculous. It's ridiculous in the engineering sector especially. It's ridiculous in the production sector. It's ridiculous in all types of work that are not effectively fake. But I wanted to put this in here because it shows the trend towards enforced economic inactivity. And now we'll get to the meat of what we're talking about here. That was more of kind of a framing preamble to tell you what isn't happening and what is happening around it.
Yes.
There's something here from Fitch Ratings, which is a slightly boilerplate piece about all of the UK labour market shortages we're supposed to be seeing. It says UK labour shortage to persist amid exodus of older workers.
I mean, maybe this is a brief moment for us to go to our sponsors, B&O Cruises.
Oh.
Do you have a giant whacking great pension you've just recently accessed?
Yes.
Did you pay off your mortgage?
Have you paid off your mortgage and immediately got equity relief? Well, take a B&O Cruise. B&O. Blow it all. Don't tell the kids.
Yeah, Boomer and Oldie Cruises is a part of Equity Release PLC in association with Don't Tell the Kids TM.
We did it, guys. We finally got it.
Enjoy the twilight of your years, ruining your children's inheritance. Anyway, we'll be back to Fitch Ratings.
Yeah, there we go. We had to. As soon as early retirement was mentioned, we had to go to our sponsor. they'll be back in future. I'm sure you'll be seeing more of B&O Enterprises and Equity Release Industries. But we digress here.
Yeah, Pol Pot mode. I support a 2-day work week.
Good news, guys. You're getting a 0-day work week.
Yeah.
Bad news. We're putting you in a hole.
I know, that does sound hilarious. There'd be the moment of wait, no working. Oh my god, it's amazing. Oh, like 1 week later and everyone's starving to death.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, somebody's scratching at like bits of grass to get up some roots for some basic sustenance. Somebody like, you better not be working there.
Well, we're being fed a very consistent narrative to justify immigration, really, that there is a big UK labour shortage that is partially being caused by an exodus for older workers, which is true. But again, that was really just caused by the lockdowns.
As we covered in the skill collapse stream, the workers that are leaving in larger rates, the older, the more skilled, those with expertise that are irreplaceable, because one, we can't train people to do the same. Two, nor can you import people that will do the same job.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
We have some of the best engineers and the best skilled people in the world in that sense. We export them all over the world. They built large parts of Dubai, of Saudi, of China. And those people are irreplaceable. They quite literally were the best in the world.
Well, this is the thing I sort of joked to you as well, though, earlier on. It's like, we import 1 million people a year.
Yes.
And we have a labour shortage. You know, let's just take that at face value for a moment. How bad are they organising our country that they can import that many people a year and can't find jobs for them?
Well, we mentioned,
of course, that's not how it works in reality.
No.
But for a moment, you hold these two things in your head and it's like, so there's 7 digits worth of people coming in. But yeah, we're 400,000 people short of jobs, but you know, surely there should be some correcting effect there, but clearly there isn't.
No, it does not appear to be self-correcting. And once again, the importation of labour doesn't appear to affect the amount of labour that gets done. Make of that what you will.
That's it. We have to increase it to 2 million people a year.
That's basically what some of them say. But I wanted to juxtapose the idea that we have this massive shortage of workers with what is considered economic inactivity. And I got asked, well, economic inactivity is different than being unemployed, isn't it? Well, the problem is that economic inactivity has been redefined several times, as has unemployment. And the unemployment rate in Britain is so low because to be classed as unemployed, you have to have been actively seeking work in the last 4 weeks and be able to start work within the next 2 weeks. If you are not either of those things, you are no longer classed as unemployed.
Yeah. Now, someone in chat who, and we're making no accusations against the people in chat, but if anyone did happen to claim GSA and would like to tell us about whether or not they actually ask you this question on a regular basis, we would appreciate that. Because I do wonder, is this just a tick box? Do they just phone you up and say, right, I'm going to phone you in 5 minutes. You're going to tell me you've got an appointment with a social worker on this date, and that means you're economically inactive for the next 4 weeks. And there's just this sort of never-ending cycle of people who, because they're away to Malaga this week, they've got a doctor's appointment next month, they've got the social workers 2 weeks after that, then they've got someone else in their house doing some work 3 weeks after that, that they just indefinitely have a reason to be, quote-unquote, economically inactive.
Well, it also interfaces with the way the benefit system works, as we'll get into, and the way that people are classed on paper seems to have been fiddled around quite heavily. There's an interesting stat here that we'll get into as well, because they talk about, you know, there's all the historic stuff, employment in April. They bring out a per capita rate here, which seems incredibly steady if you look at it.
Yeah, like, right, you know, through the 70s, through the height of the winter of discontent in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, where it nothing seems to, if you look at some of the other graphs, really jump out over, what was it, sort of 20% or something? It seems to hold that level flat.
It's very, very, very similar, it seems. If you believe the statistics, and there are actually a lot of reasons not to believe these statistics that we'll get into a bit later. A lot of it is to do with the way that they've reclassified them, the way they didn't used to measure economic inactivities in the same way. But if you take these figures at face value, it seems that the unemployment rate, the economic conditions, and the shape of society at large doesn't seem to actually affect the amount of people who are economically inactive. Now, if that were true, that would be slightly revelatory and would mean that economics, as they practice it, doesn't real. It would also mean there's something fundamentally wrong with our post-war society, which is probably true, but I do not think that these figures are particularly reliable.
Well, there would be a massive spike at the start of 2020.
Yeah.
Because everyone was economically inactive. They were paid not to work for 18 months and
I think this is a testament to the fact that really since the 1950s, the UK has been able to shuffle people on paper into different places in which a certain segment of the population always ends up in some conglomeration of categories which leaves them as economically inactive rather than being purely unemployed. Mm. But as we'll get to later, the statistics themselves largely break down in these areas.
We get to the BBC one you've got here next, which has a compendium of some of the similar statistics from ONS. And there's a couple of interesting ones in here, because we're about to discover the power of other.
The other and the unknown are very large factors in here.
Do you have data sets that you can't quite fully make sense of? Don't worry. Just classify up to anywhere between a fifth to a third of your total data within one category is just being caused by other, and then don't tell people what the other cause is.
Oh, I forgot to say thank you, Ratface, for the 2 quid.
Yeah, I was going to say Ratface for his $2.
Thank you for the $2. We are now £1.62 richer. Can buy us maybe a third of a pint. But this is one of the more general economic inactivity articles, because even the media has to acknowledge the fact that unemployment and economic activity are being shuffled around with each other. And what most people understand as being unemployed, most people who are that are classed as economically inactive. And it's been rising. It's been rising quite rapidly, which is strange because apparently it's not been rising per capita. But it has been rising, but it's not been rising, but it's real, but it's not. But the reasons for it, the great resignation, but they aren't. We'll get into some of this, because again, we'll put through all the bullshit at the end, but there is some great stuff in here about, one, how regime statistics don't work, and two, how regime narratives don't even explain their own statistics.
No.
Welcome to unreality. Who are the Britons? Millions of Britons not working. It's great. UK's low unemployment rate, the percentage of economically inactive people aged from 16 over who are unemployed.
Yeah. So look at this. This graph says in the height of the mid-80s, 12% unemployment.
Yeah.
How is it that the economically inactive number across those, you know, from 1980 to 2000 here, we've got a swing from 5%, 4.5%, right all the way up to 12%.
Yeah.
And it comes all the way back down to 7%, and then it's all the way back up to 10%, and it's all the way back down by 2000 to sort of 4.5%. Why is it flat on the other graph?
Yeah. It's bizarre that the amount of people that the government classes as economically inactive has no relation to the unemployment rate. And that doesn't work.
Well, no, what it tells us is that the economically inactive statistic only really exists to help explain away otherwise employment.
Well, this is why I'm saying that there's been a large reclassification that's happened.
Yeah.
That we have this supposed labor shortage that justifies immigration, record low unemployment, and yet...
Also, they also mention in here that their margin for error is close to 0.5%.
Which is relatively high. Who isn't working and why? The main reason for not working vary according to age. Most of the 2.7 million inactive people under 25 are students, according to the Office of National Statistics. Thing is, that didn't used to be the case either. Students used to have jobs as well.
Yes.
The majority of them don't want a job, which again is wrong. If you're age 16 to 24 and you've not got a job, there is something wrong, generally.
Well, there's weird things in here, though, because this idea of does not want a job, it's like, well...
How do you know that?
But also, it's so momentary.
Yeah.
Okay, in this specific moment, some people don't want a job. But there might actually be a reasonable subset of people who could wait out, say, a six-month period because they think more certainty is going to come down the line and would want a job later rather than now. Now, how do you classify that as someone who wants a job or someone who does not want a job?
Yeah. Well, anyone who's a student and can't find work is automatically never classed as unemployed. That's been a great fiddle. But you've got, obviously, 2.16 million here. Unemployed, sick. But you've got... As big as sick is other. But they've just, again, they only break it down by gender. There's no saying what other is. Other is bigger than caring in that. Again, other is bigger than student.
But they've tried to engage in a little bit of trickery by making the word smaller than student in the 25 to 49 category.
It's only, you know, it's not, it's more than half what the unemployment rate is than that. No one seems to quite know what these others mean. And what the other is in a data set like this would be extremely important. The reasoning for this does not seem to have been properly investigated. And again, the large thing here, yes, 50 to 64, there's more early retired people, but there's more sick people.
Yes.
There is a larger amount of people aged 50 to 64 who are economically inactive because they are long-term sick than are who have taken early retirement. Not sure what that seems supposed to say.
Thank you for the other $2, whatever.
Yeah, thank you for the other $2 with emoji soup.
Even in the like 25 to 49 category, there is like its own internally sort of like 2 million people who are either on one end or the other of being sick or caring for sick people.
Like I said, the only reason you might be putting other is because you've fallen off the 4 weeks looking for work, 2 weeks starting work thing. It might just be that these people are falling through statistical cracks that would effectively double the rate of unemployment in Britain if they were counted correctly as unemployed. It really brings home, one, how fragile that statistic is, and two, how false it is that none of these metrics, when you look at them at a proper level, makes sense.
I'll tell you one thing. Even at the very, very bottom of the barrel level, they expect you to grasp statistical competence in university.
Yeah.
If you were to do a study on employment where this much of your final result was explained by other or something non-determined by one of your variables that you're actually studying, that you would just be told to, you know, scrap that and go do something that actually makes sense. That would not be accepted.
No, that would not be acceptable. This whole thing, like I said, the whole narrative around economic inactivity doesn't make any sense, which is why we're making this stream, to help try and make some sense of it. Mm. The other thing here as well is that they talk about illness. Does it matter if people that people aren't looking for work? Many people have chosen to do something else, studying, retirement, or caring. But for others, it's not a choice. The childcare, blah, blah, blah. I want paid work, but I'm main reasons for economic inactivity. Discouraged, retired, studying, caring, sick. And the amount of people who are sick is huge, it seems. It seems that we are having some sort of national level crisis. During the pandemic, all major countries saw their workforce shrink. It really doesn't explain it properly, though.
No, of course it doesn't.
There's a lot of surface level acknowledgement this is happening. But there really isn't much reasoning for it happening. It's basically just saying, lots of people aren't choosing to work. We're not quite sure why.
Well, look further down here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that there's not enough job centres. Broadening the pool of people given support to return to the job market is key, experts argue. So instead of actually engaging in some level of deregulation that would allow employers to employ people not at exorbitant costs or risks to themselves.
Yes.
That we could find something for these people to do. But no, actually you've got to start up a therapeutic work industry that employs other people to do something completely different in the hopes that the problem may one day actually be solved.
Well, as we get into it, the idea that economic inactivity is holding steady is not the full picture. But there's been stuff in the Daily Mail, the Mail Online, Britain's economically inactive hotspots revealed. Coastal regions in Lincolnshire and Norfolk, top list, with more
You can't see it for the bloody Len Goodman tributes.
I know. Too much Len. So much Len. Man, the Mail readers really like Len. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. The big news today, Len Goodman. Goodbye, Len Goodman. Strictly will never be the same, I'm sure, not. Big Len. East Lindsay in Lincolnshire has more than half of its adult population at work. Yeah. Office for National Statistics says 19.1 million people are economically.
So I think they're. What's that? At least, and we'll get to this in a moment, but that's roughly by their numbers, a quarter of the population.
Yeah. It means that about two fifths of over 16s either didn't have a job in the week before the population study or had not looked for work in one. I think they're also including retired people there, though, in that 39% of people who don't have a job. But that's another quite large statistic, too, in that in the raw sense, I know we're counting retired people here, but in the raw sense, 40% of the adult population in Britain does not work and is not looking for work. 40%. And it's not like they've put them back in the kitchen, as we'll see later. There is
Look further on there. Yeah. And the week before the population study, or had not looked for one for a month before the census deadline, up from 36.7% in 2011.
That was at the height of the post-recession kind of unemployment stuff.
Well, if anything, what this goes to show is the fact that mass unemployment has basically been a consistent problem really since probably about the 90s. In some way, shape, or form, as we move out of, not saying that it hasn't got worse since then, but to the degree that this has been the problem, it has.
I'd say it's been a large problem since the 50s, and I'd say it's been a growing problem since the 90s, yes. But we do have 3% more economically inactive people, it seems, despite what the government might say. Although, like I said, the things are disputed. It is concentrated in specific downtrodden areas, though, as this points out. Tethering, rather, Isle of Wight, a lot of different places. Least economically inactive are...
I see someone in chat asking, can we see age demographics for unemployment? Yes, but probably not aggregated out or disaggregated out in a way that would be useful to us.
No, I looked on a lot of that, and to be fair, there's a large amount of confusion with the age demographics, and some of them aren't broke down the same way over different time periods, so the data sets are quite hard, I think deliberately hard to look at. And as we're saying here, the unemployment rate seems to revolve around who the government classes as, what the definition of unemployed is.
I can't pull myself away from the absolute brain rot that is the recommended stories of the Daily Mail.
Oh yeah, it's awful.
Five Brits already dead with Arcturus new COVID. Meghan Markle and then Honey Boo Boo's got herself a black boyfriend.
Ooh.
No!
Anyway, it's not spread evenly. But there are large amounts of Britain, specifically on the coasts, it says here. It's a shame what's happening to our coastal towns that have extremely high economic inactivity. But
what's the least economically inactive there?
They're mostly...
city centre of London? Yeah. Because there's hundreds of thousands of people living in London that just aren't documented.
Yeah. Well, it's also just that those super-duper central areas don't have a high population. And if you can afford to live in them, you are definitely in some form of employment.
Yes.
Or you are retired and not classed in a lot of these statistics. There's another one here from Wigan Today, talking about how 2 in 5 Wigan residents are economically inactive. And that's just another one about it being a hotspot of economic inactivity. But a lot of the northern towns suffered disproportionately from this. There is mass unemployment in the north of England that is extremely long running, and it has simply been reclassed as economic inactivity.
It's the same with a lot of the areas in Scotland. I mean, there's large swathes of Glasgow that once all the steel mills and the Clyde and this, that, and the next thing all shut down. And there was nothing to do. Same with all your sort of mining towns around the borders. I know there's a large amount of Wales that was completely wiped out when the mines went away.
Yes, it was completely. That wasn't just a mining town. That was
That's not to get into some whole long autistic thing about whether or not the mines were in and of themselves some sort of state industry. What we cannot look away from is the fact that there is nowhere near amount the level of genuine economic calculation going on to make a subset of people employed to a level where the people themselves are satisfied.
Well, all you see in the headlines is labour shortage, record unemployment.
Mm.
You have some discussion of, oh, isn't it weird that there's all these people who, you know, they're put forward as being carers and long-term sick and people choose not to work, but about a third of them are other. So we don't.
Yeah,
we don't,
I mean, it's like another one of these sort of situations where, for one reason or another, God knows what it is. It obviously can't just be that our elites are evil and hate us, but that we've had both of the worst elements of two phenomena that should cancel each other out somehow. We aren't able to produce anything. The economy's going to tits. No one's employed. Yet there's no jobs going, and there's too many people. It's like, well. You know, these things should come out in the wash, and it just never has for some reason.
I think I forgot to open this link, unfortunately, but the something you mentioned as well, and that we've talked about the fact that driving for younger people has become unviable now.
Mm.
If you are a young person, you do not drive, generally speaking, unless you are somebody who is of means of some kind.
Mm.
But they're talking about the train cancellations. This is from November 2020, but it's people talking about traveling to work can cost me more than I earn, which is quite common. If you look at people who are on minimum wage, especially, which is quite a large proportion of the British population, especially those under the age of 30, minimum wage work does not make sense, basically, unless you can walk to it or get a cheap bus.
Unless you're living in a very cheap to live in area and you're not paying for your own housing, it just doesn't work. It is now to the point where you have to apply for extra benefits whilst also working to make work actually worth your time instead of just not working and claiming even more benefits.
Well, there's quite a large amount of people who have been given basically top-ups, as it were, to their income to a certain level, but only if they do certain things.
Mm.
There's a lot of people who also fall through the cracks of that system. There's a lot of people, like us, really. Yeah. If you have a household that's made up of adults, but, you know, there's not, you know, basically you have a friend living with you, that is a really bad thing to do. The government doesn't want you living with your friends. It does not want you having a shared house of economically independent adults, because it will hammer you if you want to claim any form of benefit you could claim if you were, say, in social housing or living on your own.
Mm.
There are huge disincentives there, but that's not really the point of the stream. What is the point here, though, is that it is very, very difficult for young people to make work for them, as it were.
Well, yes, I think we could maybe make the point now so it doesn't slip my mind, but if you are in the position of being long-term unemployed, things are quite cushy. If you are in the position of being long-term employed for something more than minimum wage, things are probably quite cushy. But getting from one to the other is nigh on impossible.
It is.
For you to leave a job where you've been paid well enough to have savings and some sort of way to support yourself for a couple of years if the worst happens, you would have to spend every penny you earned, be kicked out of basically your own private accommodation, and be on the street before someone would come along and give you everything you need to live normally. And vice versa. If you're unemployed and you're getting everything for free, the moment you try and work, all of a sudden you've got to pay for all of those things now.
Well, I have a decent anecdote about this from when I used to work in kitchens. We got a good chef, and he was a good worker. He was quite well trained, and he was only doing a certain amount of hours for us. And as soon as he started doing any form of work for the restaurant I worked for at the time at all, he lost all his benefits.
Mm.
They took them all away at once. And he basically said, look, guys, I can't work here anymore. They've taken away my housing benefit. They've taken away part of my child benefit. They've taken away, you know, some of the transport stuff that I get. I am now much worse off and I can't afford to live. I was much
because
better off.
Because he went from working 18 to 24 hours a week.
Yeah. I'm much better off on benefits. And I'm not able to make work viable. And that is incredibly common. That's been common in the UK really since the Blair rejiggering of benefits. Since the reworking of the Blair welfare state by Gordon Brown, that has been the case that in large amounts of working class situations, you are far better off on benefits.
And
far
see,
better.
It's not even so much the point of, the people that are claiming benefits, they're just fucking lazy. They don't want to work. It's like...
It's the incentive, stupid.
Yeah, well, not even just the... Because when you say, there's no incentive, people think, it's because you're jealous you can't make more money whilst working. It's like, no, it's because to actually get from one of the positions to another requires so much sort of like uncertainty and possible hardship relative to the conditions you were living in before that it's not a choice people who aren't, you know, au fait with struggle, i.e. modern man, would be really willing to make.
Well, as I said, work has become economically viable and unprofitable for millions. Many are simply working to run and finance a car. We'll get to it in future streams, but millions less people under the age of 25 have driver's licenses and fewer still run cars regularly, making younger people far less mobile and flexible in terms of jobs and far more...
Wait, it's like I can't do the mail round around here because I don't have a driver's license.
Yeah.
I can't go and do cleaning jobs or any sort of basic menial labour that, again, pays minimum wage because not some of them you are required, one, to have a driver's licence, which now in and of itself costs thousands of pounds to do.
Yes.
Or two, you have to have a driver's licence and a car.
It turns out the people who weren't, you know, just shuffling around as the labour market reopens were mostly going off on long-term sick.
Mm.
A large part of what was the Great Resignation is now being sold to us as a national sickness crisis with a few pinches of long COVID thrown in along the way. There's one here from The Spectator, which just talks about more Britons than ever are out of work due to long-term sickness.
Just to add to what we were talking about before, I see someone in chat asking, so what, there's no transition or kind of wean-off period between benefits and how and when you start work. No, there isn't.
No. There's supposed to be, but in reality there is not.
If you report anything in that period wrong by the day, you could be liable to pay thousands in fines and interest and possibly go to jail for fraud.
Yes. It is very difficult to navigate.
Unless,
that
of course, you're not from Britain.
Yeah.
You're here illegally. You're claiming benefits through a social worker that handles all the paperwork for you, and you're moonlighting on the side in some sort of corner shop getting paid less than minimum wage because your wages don't need to be recorded because you don't have a national insurance number.
Here's another, some 9 million working age people, that again, that's taking off the retired people. A different number every time, it seems, though. Mm. Are out of work and not looking for it either. Figures released by the Office of National Statistics this morning revealed that this number has grown by 360,000 since before the pandemic began. This is an increase from the previous quarter from the same time last year too. Now, over a fifth of working age people find themselves economically inactive. So is it? Okay, it's a fifth. Rising inactivity has been driven by long-term sickness since the pandemic. Today's figures reveal those inactive due to illness hit a record high of 2.5 million people. We see it here, the long-term sick. If we go from 2020, it's amazing. The long-term sick people seem to disappear, which is an odd one of how people, are classified. I think other is largely furlough there.
Yeah. Although this is the point I made to you is, you know, how do we know what we're really looking at here? There are obviously things we can allude to, and we will in a moment, about what's happened health-wise to people, but could a large band of this just be entirely explained by the fact that we had cycles of people every month who had, you know, once a month their phone went off because they bumped into someone in the street that may or may have not had COVID and then they had to not be in work for 5 days?
Well, there's the discussion as well to be had here There's another one here from the Commons Library. Again, you can just look at that. That the long-term sick is definitely the largest contributing factor in quote-unquote the Great Resignation. This is transferred from a worker revolt to a sickness crisis seamlessly.
Oh, I think a workers' revolt would also be a public health crisis if you really to ask them about it.
I would say so, yes. It goes on to kind of talk about the stuff, back to work, payroll employees, the employment level, blah, 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 blah. But it's comparing some of the differences, the earnings, inflation, a lot of that stuff, BOE base rates. Basically looking at the macro economic indicators and talking about how work is less viable, like we've been talking about, but in a much softer way. But I want to cover the fact that a large part of the economic activity, as we saw in the other statistics, is because of sickness, and that is a larger contributing factor than in the past. And I think we'll have to have a discussion about whether it is quote-unquote real or not. There's another one here from the Commons Library, how is health affecting economic inactivity? Long-term sickness is the most common reason for leaving the workforce. Oh no, there goes the Great Resignation. Oh no, everybody's sick. Access to healthcare. They're talking about long wait times. They're basically kind of arbitrating some of the therapeutic kind of NHS state stuff here with all this and talking about really how there is some sort of national health crisis. I believe also, is long COVID mentioned here? It is. There it is. Possible, yes. The possible impact of long COVID. There. It's all folded into the narrative. Oh, Britain's just an aging population, blah, 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 blah. But the numbers are quite dramatic. Economic activity due to long-term sickness has been increasing since the start of 2019. Again, there was quite a lot in 2010, but that was to do with reclassification, I think, as well, of people going on the sick because they couldn't find work. Why are people economically inactive?
Yeah, here's an interesting graph for people. Just look at this one for a moment.
We'll go over this one in a sec. But the discussion I wanted to have before we do, sorry, is there's three options here when it comes to the whole long-term sick thing. That Britain is undergoing a population-level health crisis that makes millions of people unable to work.
Whether or not this is a consequence of the vaccines ruining millions of people's cardiac systems, yes, is something we will leave for a very long day far away from here, when we actually might know some element of any truth to what happens there.
The second option is that these people cannot find work and their best long-term option is to be certified as a long-term sick person to gain income. That they are, you know, the system has effectively failed them and they're a write-off. Basically, they've been written off.
Well, I was going to say the two and the three you've got here are one
or,
and the same,
I think. Yeah, or there's a slightly third different option which falls on from that is they have been convinced they are unfit for work via mental health or other services and would otherwise be in employment. It's kind of a case of, you know, they are physically or mentally unfit for work or they're having to be reclassified as basically a fiddle to keep them from being on the streets.
I could imagine being someone who was then... who is in my position, who is not as adept at using my time otherwise, that had I just been revolving in and out of Zoom calls with weird folk that I'm meant to use to pretend I've got GSA, and then cycling in and out of job centre appointments that get constantly cancelled because the office is shut down because of COVID, that over the last 3 years, I think I'd have lost my head too, you know? I can see why some people might have done the very same.
Well, I've got that in the wrong order here, but it's talking about, well, why are young people leaving the labour market? And it says economic inactivity has been increasing in the UK. This insight discusses why young people may not be entering the workforce after leaving education. And basically, it talks about the fact that young people not in education, employment, or training. Again, the neat changes here.
Well, yeah, there's, what was it again in this one? The purple line in this graph here.
Is other, once
is
again.
Is other, which is one of the biggest results. However, I think you did miss one from your previous source, which we're going to go over slightly.
No, I want to go over that as a bigger discussion later.
All right, fair enough.
But it basically goes into the fact that there's a lot of people, the numbers of caring have gone down, which will become important later. But the number of long-term and temporary sick has almost doubled. In terms of younger people, in terms of people under 25, economic inactivity is increasing among young men, which is the point in the other one as well.
Yes.
which is the other one here, which is women and men have basically, in direct proportion to each other, become economically active and inactive. It is a very big factor here. And the reason for it, it seems, is that changes in female need economic activity by a reason. The reason in 2010 a lot of people were not in education, training, or employment was because they were caring. That number has plummeted.
Yeah, so by some 200,000.
So,
and has not been replaced by 200,000 men that have taken up the jobs.
No. As we'll go into here, there is supposedly a care crisis in the UK. That is very much part of the narrative. Oh, fuck off, Telegraph.
But no, but much as they say there's a crisis with healthcare, there's a crisis with social care, there's a crisis with elderly care.
Yeah.
We do not have the number of people employed in positions to take care of our sick and our mentally ill and those who cannot take care of themselves.
Well, what's happened is that hundreds of thousands of women have
left the home and been put into the workplace.
Yeah, they've specifically, though, it seems that they've left multi-generational homes in which they were caring for older people. They've entered the workforce, and instead of them stepping in and being paid for the care that they're doing, they quite simply have no one to care for them. It is another breakdown of the family, another breakdown of the traditional role of women that's had a real impact. And as we see here, neatness has gone down for women because they've stopped caring, but neatness has gone up for men in the same proportion. So really, it's become a zero-sum game.
Yes.
They have sacrificed one demographic at the expense of another, but women were caring for elderly people in the home. Men have just been turfed out to nowhere.
We're getting all the worst aspects.
Yeah.
We've taken good men and good jobs, put them completely to the wayside, out of jobs that they had and provided for.
Yes.
We've put women in the jobs that can't do them correctly, whilst also taking them away from caring roles that the men aren't interested in.
Well, here's the green, the green line at the bottom is men who are caring for family or are in the home. Men haven't gone into the home, they haven't gone into caring. That narrative that is put forward in the US and the UK and in large parts of Europe is false. It is not happening. Women have removed themselves from the home and from caring for people. Men have not stepped in, and there quite simply is nobody there outside of the government system to care for people. That seems very deliberate, and it seems like a breakdown, again, of the family. This is really a story of family breakdown. And as we talked about during the skills collapse, the deliberate alienation of men as a class, as a class of worker. And there's again the one we talked about earlier. I might close that actually, but it's economic activity by gender goes down for women, goes up for men. It is basically one for one, and it shows really that the economic management is, as I it's become my favorite word, but it's arbitration between genders. It is effectively a societal level struggle session in which men are turfed out of work to nowhere, and women are removed from caring roles and from traditional roles and put into the workforce.
Mm.
It is a double whammy that erodes the traditional fabric of British society. But there's a bit more of a discussion to get into here as well, because it could all be a grift. There have been rising levels of mental health and associated treatment for decades. Young people are somewhat further down the pipeline than older people are, especially men. They are much more into, I would consider, kind of the reality of the Great Reset. And they're already feeling the effects of modernity, increased modernity, or what will be normality, in quotes, in 10 years.
And as you've got here, it seems the Great Resignation was the labour market instability after lockdowns coupled with large amounts of people leaving the workforce due to ill health or long-term underemployment. It is not an emergent market phenomenon of free will. This is not individuals making choices. This is people just being completely subject to the conditions that have been foisted upon them.
Yes. It's the fact that a large amount of people are giving up on looking for work.
And I think will we quickly look at the one last side point to a lot of this stuff as well?
We've got a half an hour left. We've got quite a lot to look at here, really. Another point I want to make really is that modernity has destroyed people mentally, especially younger people. People under 25, whether it is genuine or not, they do at least believe that they are experiencing a mental health crisis. These people are unable to cope, whether they are, you know, not mentally prepared for the world due to the way the education system is another matter, but it is happening. And there is a large amount of labor force departicipation because of the under 25s rampant mental health crisis, or at least as far as I can tell, it's being portrayed that way, but it genuinely is that way. It's one of the things that I think
there is definitely
happening.
Something afoot.
There is something
whether
happening.
Or not it's a large number of people putting their hands up saying I'm depressed, I don't want to work or not is yet to be found.
As other people have talked about, it is the psychosocial aspect of it as well. Especially when it comes to men. Especially when it comes to younger men. Men under 25 do not have a reason to participate in the labor market. That's covered, that's covered quite well by other people. This isn't going to become kind of like an MRA stream or anything of that. That's kind of taken as a given. But I believe what we are seeing here, especially in the under 25 demographic, is the outgrowth of that. It is what we talked about during the skills collapse thing, which is a large amount of men are exiting the workforce. They're not doing anything. They're not going to caring. They're not taking up the female role. It is quite simply a destruction of our young men. And that's partially where the inactivity comes from. That's partially why people are no longer working. But a large amount of people either believe they're sick or believe they need to be classed as sick to survive, which ultimately has the same consequence that people are pushed into this space of effectively being written off. I know you were kind of going into it there, so you can lead in for this, but another thing is that I don't think really, ultimately, we can trust the official statistics on economic activity.
Absolutely not. The moment you just take the census at word and just presume that there is only X many million people because the ONS says so, you've completely lost the plot. I mean, this is like an independent article from 2007. CityEye, facts on a plate, our population is at least 77 million. Now, this would have put the estimate at the time.
This has been 2007, though, keep
that's
in mind.
No, that's what I'm saying. The 2007 estimate for the population would have been sub 70 million.
Yeah.
So you're talking over a 10% margin. And they're saying at least 77 million.
You can't say that. That's racist.
What's race got to do with any of it?
Racist.
Okay.
You can't say there's more people here than there actually are. That's racist. But very, very much collapse watch here again. We are reaching peak collapse.
This is
watch.
One of those things that just, like, some people don't consider. But genuinely, like, how would you know if there weren't 100 million people in Britain right now? How would you know?
Well, the first link I came across when researching for this, was basically someone trying to debunk this. What this says is that supermarkets estimate that even with overbuying and the amount of food that gets thrown away, that the amount of food that is sold in Britain shows that the population is likely about 77 million. This is corroborated by the mobile phone statistics, which shows that there must be, what does it say here?
North of 80 million.
Yeah, there are 80 million mobile phone contracts in the UK.
Now, think for a moment how many people are young enough not to be using a phone, how many people are old enough not to be using a phone, and then factor out the fact that I would actually probably suggest lots of people might not even have maybe SIM cards and stuff for that anymore to the same extent.
No.
So this is saying at least, 5 or 6 million more than the census would say now. And then you have another one here that says 97.23 million mobile phone connections.
That includes smart
UK.
Devices and anything with a SIM card, basically.
But you would have to have millions and millions of people with 2 and 3 devices for that.
Yeah,
it's
there's 1.37 active connections, so it's active mobile contracts per head of population. That includes infants. That's not like per adult, that's per head of population. So something does not make sense. The supermarkets are saying there's more people. The phones are saying there's more people.
The GPs are saying there's more people. I mean, I don't know if we have one of those ones. You've also got a sewage one, I believe, as well.
I've got one from The Guardian. The GPs are saying that there is 20% more people in Hammersmith and Fulham, of course it is. Things like that. So the GPs, there's more GPs. There's more people signed up to GP than there are people in Britain, which is not... A lot of people aren't signed up to GPs.
Well, yeah, that one there is saying 2.3 million.
Yeah. 4% more.
I believe I've seen, and this is partly where this little bit of it started really was, I remember looking at one a couple of years ago, and it was like I remember about a year or so ago, it was an ONS one in partnership with the NHS.
Yep.
That estimated that through the number of people signed up for basic inoculation programs in the UK, that they were looking at north of like 83 or 84 million.
Yes.
They were looking at almost something like an 18 or 16% margin above what the census puts out.
Again, this is just us skimming through it. We'll go through these in detail because we have a proper immigration stream coming up at some point. It's just an article here from The Guardian. The sewage tells the story of millions who'll miss out. Our waste reveals inner cities are undercounted, yet Cameron is cutting up constituencies with no regard to fairness. This is a Guardian article from 2010, which is admitting that there are hundreds of thousands, probably millions, probably tens of millions of people in this country that we do not know about. And the way they're reporting on it is... they're not counted in the constituencies. This is quite literally, we have lots of, you know, we have potentially millions more illegal immigrants than we realize, and those people need to be allowed to vote.
Yes.
Is what this is doing. But it just, it mentions, there's a study of it here. I'm not going to go through it. This is the 2019 version. Thames Water routinely tells the government that there are far more people that they are serving than are supposed to exist in Britain. You can go and look at these populations and property projections. They disagree very heavily with the censuses. And this is what's referenced here. It's abundantly clear that the 2001 census missed millions of people, blah, 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 blah. And yes, I'm trying to find that other mention of sewage again. Our best estimate of population comes from sewage. Thames Water says the outflow of rich or poor alike reveals true numbers. And Slough has 30,000 more people than officially registered. Bagley fears census takers will have little time to check the estimated 3,500 houses in multiple occupation, i.e. full of immigrants.
Yeah, the sheds in the back garden with Albanian dudes.
56 languages to speak, besides there are only 6 slots for people on each forms. And it just talks about, they're not being counted, they're not voting. But here's, again, The Guardian casually admitting millions more people in Britain than we know about. Again, here's one from The Spectator in 2021. And they talk about the fact that 5.6 million people applied, so physically applied, for permanent residence in the UK for amnesty after Brexit. So these are EU residents who now live in the UK, when there were only estimated to be a maximum of 3.7 million of them in the country. So 5.7 million of them have bothered their shirt to fill in a form, when there's only supposed to be 3.7 million of them.
Which means there's probably close to about 7 or 8.
Yeah, there's probably close to about 8 million EU immigrants in Britain. So that would...
Yeah. Breakdowns of citizenship by country demonstrate the same pattern. Twice as many Romanians and Bulgarians have already had their settlement applications approved.
Yeah. So there's supposed to be 600,000 and 1.2 million have already been approved. So and these people, by the way, have no reason to hide. These are EU citizens who had the right under the free movement agreement pre-Brexit to move to the UK. Mm. These are not illegals being given amnesty. These are legal immigrants being given amnesty. And there is twice as many of these people who had no reason to hide the fact they were there in the UK. And really, it's kind of bringing us on to a point of all of these statistics, when you think of holes that big, don't matter.
Yes. It basically means everything that we've done on this stream this evening has been redundant.
No, not really redundant. They can point to trends within a larger part of the native British population.
Mm.
But what we don't know is really what's going on with, you know, outside of the official people.
Well, yeah, it was
officially long-term economically inactive trends per capita have held roughly steady, despite the narratives of mass unemployment and skill shortage. These figures are potentially very misleading and do not take into account the changes in measure and also, as we talked about, the massive non-native population that is potentially living here undocumented. These only include the official figures only include the official people. There are potentially tens of millions more people in the UK than is recognised. And again, we'll talk about this in much more detail in the future. Where's my other one gone? That's the joke there. With the way we saw lockdown and all of that, it kind of begs the question too of how many of these people went home, how many came back. We do not know. Is the big thing about basically all the population level statistics in Britain. Like we really just do not know as it becomes more clown worldy in terms of the immigration, what the demographics are, because Britain refuses to recognize what its actual population is. And that's kind of the lead in there. And it will come up time and again as we cover UK employment trends. But there's some more stuff here. There's some more stuff I think we need to discuss in terms of outgrowth a bit. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, I was going to make the point of when the census first came out earlier on this year, I remember people sort of talking about it. I just sort of, on the face of it, was like, well, are you going to trust that the immigrants fill out the census? I mean, to me, that on the face of it, much like the, we have an unemployment, or we have a labour shortage, but we take in 1 million people a year. It's like, well, we have an immigrant problem, but we know we have an immigrant problem because they're nice enough to fill out the forms that we ask them to. It's like, really?
Oh, thank you for the £5, Kate. I don't know if I read that or not. And sorry you can't access your cursed PayPal. it happens to the best of us. Thank you for the £4.99, Alex Knight. Good point. He's right. He says, I looked into a few 4-day work week studies. The vast majority of supposed benefits had no effect on productivity, but they were in the public sector.
Well, yeah, that is a point in and of itself.
Of course they have no effect on productivity. They're in the public sector. And as I said, if you do want to donate, I'll put our homeless avatars back on. And I'll shake my little cup. Oh dear!
Yeah, I don't know. The best I can do is a pen and a tumbler, I think.
Yeah. We'll shake it. Oh god, that's peeking the microphone.
Sorry.
we'll shake our little baking cup there. But no, we generally do okay. To be fair, and you guys have been very good this stream. The outgrowth of some of this, though, and the stuff that we'll be talking about as larger themes as we go on here, is that this plays into UBI.
Mm.
This is a huge, huge, I think, narrative to push towards UBI.
Well, yeah, it's the obvious precursor.
Yeah.
The people don't want to work, so the people must want UBI.
Yeah.
It's just that easy. The consent's manufactured like that.
The other part of it is that there's very, very clear trends in the managerial agenda, both in the long and the medium term, that are centered around getting the majority of people out of work.
Or out of older styles of work.
Yes.
Into new work, because yes, in New Britain, you need a new job.
Yes, it is new work for New Britain.
And then hiring in the UK as well, especially for contractors and self-employed inter-business such as IR35 policy, makes economic activity in general far harder than there's any reason for it to be. This then coupled with DEI and increasing compliance and deliberate sabotage through things like Brexit, which is something again we'll cover in a completely different stream,
yes,
has meant that there are so many levels of obfuscation and tape work. And I know there's like the whole libertarian talking point of, oh, the red tape, and that's why people aren't employed. But quite frankly, if you want to employ someone for £45,000 a year to do a job, for you to get them into that job, it's going to cost you another £45,000 just to get the person there and have all the payroll stuff set up before they've made even a penny for you.
No, the amount of work it is to get people into work is higher than ever. The amount of red tape, the amount of cost, the amount of compliance. Compliance is a huge part of my job. It's a huge part of everyone's job. Compliance is the majority of what a lot of people will do in their day, even. They will fill in forms, they will fill in tracking sheets, spreadsheets. monitoring their own work is the majority of some people's work, which is a huge problem. There's the wider stuff as well, in that there's all the interplay with immigration, the care crisis we talked about earlier, and just generally the overall idea that we are moving into a post-work society.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like people have actually been enjoying this stream somewhat, and I see Harry Robinson in chat, they're talking about the minimum income guarantee, which is a very good point, because of course we've covered in the New Britain framework before that there will be your minimum infrastructure guarantee, which is your 15-minute city. And that's why you'll have a minimum income guarantee, which is your UBI.
Yes. I mean, it's already called universal credit.
Yes.
It's in Revelations, Pete. No. It can't really get much more obvious. The reclassification, though, of unemployment to economic inactivity, I think is also part of a destigmatization. These people aren't the dirty unemployed. They are, you know, these people are choosing to care. They're, you know, they're choosing to do this. They're choosing to do that. These are, it's almost, if you try and wedge into it from the Great Resignation narrative, which was not true, these people are being portrayed as almost being liberated from work.
We've been very generously donated £5 by the man himself, Panama Hat.
Thank you.
Why do they push UBI so hard? What's the incentive for them? Or is it purely luxury space communism ideology? I'm not too sure.
I know.
Well,
I that will be an entire stream in of itself. Mm. And I hate to hype. Like, the answer will actually blow your mind. But we have to work through it to get there.
Which is why we're doing things like this on the way to get there.
This is one step forward.
I'm sure you could give them the slightest tease.
You know what? I'll have to justify it at some point, but most people's jobs are fake.
Yes.
Keeping people in fake work takes resources. Simply giving them UBI is easier for the managerial class than providing them with fake work. Simply just paying people to fuck off is cheaper than pretending that they have a job.
Actually the Trailer Park Boys, pay you $100 to fuck off.
Well, we need that gift.
I actually remember making one of these for Twitter many moons ago when San Francisco passed a thing like saying they were going to pay people like $200 a day not to work. This was a different one. It was about paying people to like not kill folk. And it's I'm going to pay you $100 not to kill someone. This is it.
I'll get rid of the line go up. Which is our famous and extremely liberal graph, by the way.
I also think as well there is an element to the UBI thing that is about degrowth. And I think that's one of the more interesting elements, again, to me, is at what point do the progressive elites turn against it, the idea of perfect, you know, total material consumption, or do they have a war in and of themselves between that? But we are yet to see. I see Kate in chat saying, show us your ankles. No, I've got my hijab on. You're not allowed to see them.
You can't see it. She's got her burkini on,
yes,
which is tastefully covering her ankles, I will say. No. The point is really that giving people a pat on the head and having them sit in an office and do emails all day isn't worth it for the managerial class. There is a massive amount
of
resources.
They will get ChatGPT to do that job just as badly as you do it.
And as we've seen with, you know, the whole perfect furlough propaganda and all the, furlough was great, I just put my feet up on the couch. That was the big point of the lockdowns.
Which is making people accept that as a social situation, which is in and of itself so ridiculous.
Well, it is that the whole point of the pandemic response was to get people used to the idea that they can sit, that, you know, they can abandon their post and the world won't end. Think about that. They quote unquote shut down the economy apart from the essential workers, in quotes.
And we've not all starved to death yet.
No. As I have said on Twitter, and as I will put out a piece about at some point, and as I will cover in more detail, the essential worker narrative and arbitration process is going to be essential to what is coming. Whether, you know, non-essential workers will be put on UBI is what it will be. It's like, look, your work is unessential. We live in a carbon-constrained world. You commuting to work and back is destroying the planet. You just sit home. we'll take care of you. We live in the post-scarcity society, and you undertaking economic activity is going to literally end the world, so we're going to pay you $100 to fuck off. Is
yeah, and on that note, good night.
good night, folks. Let me just double check. I've
Buy tickets for Nomos. Goodbye.
Goodbye.